When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
This is the best club in the world. Don't care what other people think.
Here comes the corner right at the end. Virgil van Dijk rising to meet it. In on the line from Darwin Núñez. And Liverpool have their second goal.
Well, it's impossible to work out where Liverpool's season is going. Defeat to Leeds, followed by a win against an unbeaten Napoli side. So they cruise into the knockout phase of the Champions League, and could they still become the team that every other side in Europe would prefer to avoid? In the meantime, they've got to get their act together in the Premier League. Spurs away awaits. If you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can read all of the articles on the site. Head to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Special price of £1 a month for 6 months at theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. I'm Steve Hothersall. This Red Agenda includes Andy Jones and Mirror journalist David Anderson. We start with the Champions League, and can Liverpool forge a path to the latter stages in a season where so many questions are being asked of their credibility? We know the teams now, Andy, that they could possibly face, and I think we know who we'd all prefer them to face at this stage.
Yeah, ideally you're looking at Porto and Benfica. Didn't expect Benfica to be in there, but after the, you know, what they did last night to somehow manage to top the group, that was sort of a, felt like a little bit of a bonus. So yeah, it's obvious that those two are the two that stand out compared to Real Madrid and Bayern, who, you know, are, you know, the two of the big European juggernauts. But you know, there's so many stories, isn't there, to tell from those two sides. You've got, you know, potential of Mane returning, which will obviously be, you know, an emotional night. Or you have the Real Madrid who just like to beat Liverpool in this competition over the last few years, whether that be in a final or obviously there was a couple of years ago, wasn't there, during the lockdown season when they knocked Liverpool out as well. So I think everyone, it's fair to say, given Liverpool's record against Porto, they're probably the ideal ones. But then obviously Liverpool beat Benfica last season, didn't they? So they've shown they can do it. And, you know, it's a long time now to wait until those games. And you hope that Liverpool are in a position with the squad and whether, you know, potentially strengthened in January to be all guns or, you know, firing on all cylinders, if you like, going into those games, no matter who they get.
The draw's Monday morning, 11 o'clock in Neon. The Porto lads, David, will just be going, ah, oh, we're going to get Liverpool again. We'll give up before we even start. But then, as Andy says, Liverpool-Real Madrid is one where perhaps Madrid have got the sign over us.
No, you're right, Steve. You can see the psychological element coming into play there. Whereas Porto, I think it's been clear in the last one or two times, really, where you can see there's that mental block. Oh, it's not Liverpool again. And some of them almost seem beaten before they cross the goal line, because you can understand what's going to happen, really. And as you say, conversely with Real Madrid, you know, that crushing disappointment in last season's final when it looked like, you know, Liverpool were sure going to do it. They almost seemed to be there. Repeat of Paris 81, Liverpool playing well. Real staggered through really to the final, really should have lost to Manchester City in the semi-finals, and you thought, right, this is the moment Liverpool can sort of do it. They have been the better team, but just didn't happen, you know, on the night, you know, without sort of revisiting that old territory. So you could argue there's that then thing in Liverpool's minds where, oh no, not Real Madrid, as Andy says, three times have beaten Liverpool in the last sort of few seasons as well, plus a couple of beatings in the group stage under Brendan Rodgers, and was it 2014 as well? So you could say there's what, a bit of a hoodoo there. But it's interesting, we all get very head up about these draws, you know, who do you want, and, you know, oh, is it better to finish top and second and stuff, and sometimes it doesn't really play out like that. Like Andy just said, there's like, this is unprecedented this season. We're now going to have this 5-week break for the World Cup where a lot of the world's best players are going to often play in Qatar, and we don't really know what state they're going to come back in. Like, from Liverpool's point of view, I hope they're going to recover, you know, Diaz and Jota, so hopefully they should be in better shape come sort of February, really. But for a lot of other teams, it's like, who knows what sort of team you're going to have, you know, coming back then, really.
Well, it could be the Mane factor as well, couldn't it? You've got a sneaking suspicion that Sadio Mane against Liverpool might be on the cards, Andy. He'd get a good welcome, wouldn't he?
Oh yeah, he'd get an unbelievable welcome because of the person he is, I think, just generally, because everyone just loved him because of what he did, both on the pitch and just what he was as a person. And yeah, no, he'd get him, maybe until he like scored. And then if that happened, wouldn't quite be as welcome, I don't think. But it's just one of them that feels like poetic, doesn't it? One of those where, you know, the old player coming back, given as well the amount of talk about how much Liverpool have potentially missed him this season as well. It just all sort of seems to fit together, doesn't it? As Liverpool are going to get Bayern Munich and Sadio Mane is going to rock up.
And of course, you think back, Andy, to the season where they won the Champions League and they faced Bayern in the knockout stages, first game, a game that Sadio Mane featured heavily in with a terrific goal away.
Yeah, that was like one of the big, big statements, wasn't it? Going to the Allianz and 3-1 and the first goal he scores and that touch and how he just sort of bamboozles Neuer. And that's one of the great Liverpool Champions League goals under Klopp, I think. And yeah, his performance that day and Liverpool's performance in general, that was a big announcement. This was like, we're here, you know, to win this competition, we're serious, and good luck trying to beat us, because not only have we got Anfield where we're going to be dominant, we can now come away from home and beat these top sides as well. And yeah, that was a big statement win, and he was a massive, massive part of that.
I think the win over Napoli was a massive statement. I mean, I personally believe, David, that they still carried the fear factor for any other side in Europe, bar Real Madrid, of course. An unpredictability that any other team is going to be on edge about. I mean, Napoli were completely unbeaten. They've been on a 13-game winning run.
I don't know. I think that Napoli win was a bit of an iceberg win, Steve. You look at it and you go, yep, Napoli storming Syria, unbeaten since April. Liverpool have beaten them 2-0, kept a clean sheet. You think, yep, all good. But I think if you look beneath the surface, there's a lot more to that performance. You think that was a game they might easily have lost. You know what I mean? There's that tight VAR, which took about 6 years to resolve, and which would have given them the lead and stuff. And of course, Liverpool's goals were a bit late, and the last one from Nunez deep in injury time was also VAR as well. So maybe I'm being overly negative about it. I suppose the problem with Liverpool this season is there's so many times you've seen a big result, you think, yeah, this is it, this is the turning point, this is the catalyst, this will light them and ignite the season, watch them go now, and then they just sort of splutter a bit. So it's that inconsistency that just infuriates you, really, where you're just not sure anymore which Liverpool team will sort of turn up.
But is Europe different, David?
Well, the only thing about Europe, you're right, Steve, you said have they still got the fear factor, and you're right, anybody looking at Liverpool think, wow, you know, finalists last season, winners 2019, finalists 2018, always make the knockout stages, Klopp is the specialist, especially getting out of group stage, but also a two-legged football, it's hard to sort of rival his record over that time, and you chuck in the Anfield factor, everyone knows, all opposition teams know what it's like in Anfield with a cop and everyone a full voice, so That is a factor. You're right. It's easy to be sort of negative about Liverpool from a Premier League perspective, and the fact that Leeds came and won there, and you think, oh no, it's Fortress Anfield has fallen. But in European terms, you're right, Steve. Nobody will be in that draw. Those four teams will be thinking, a fancy Liverpool, because certainly not, because you sort of know that they are the experts at the two-legged tie. And as we said before, Liverpool, we hope, will be in much better shape come February than they are right now.
It's a free-for-all at this stage. Look, when I turned up to the ground the other night, Andy, I was thinking maybe a couple of youngsters in this side, but Jurgen played a blinder, because I think what he realised was, got to give this squad confidence. It's got to be senior players. They've got to make a statement.
Yeah, I was also surprised by how strong it was, given, you know, you've got Tottenham at the weekend, which feels like a huge, huge game. And this one, you know, the Napoli game, didn't have loads riding on it. Obviously, there was a world where Liverpool could get a result, which meant they could top the group. But I don't think anyone sort of was kidding themselves that was, you know, really a possibility. So it was one of those games where, I mean, I quite enjoyed it because it just felt like the pressure was off, which has not been the case for Liverpool this season. Every game has felt like such a, you know, a big one that they've got to win to try and get themselves out of this slump and stuff like that. And I think that kind of showed in the players' performance. I think there was a little bit more of a relaxation about them. There's loads of different factors. There's obviously that thing that people talk about, the amount, you know, I think it's like 2 million or something for every Champions League group stage win. So that probably plays a part in it as well. But I think you're right. I think at this point, it's, given we're so close to the World Cup now, there's no real point in continuing to rotate. You might as well make sure that your best players are on the pitch, continuing to try and find some bit of rhythm to try and end what has been a really difficult, you know, period of the season. as positively as possible. And, you know, it was interesting, it goes back to the 4-3-3 system after sort of the different styles he's been playing in with the 4-4-2 and the diamond and that type of shape. It was interesting, went back to that. Used Curtis Jones in a bit of a, in an interesting role. But yeah, I think it was important to just sort of keep things ticking over. And, you know, because I think the other thing is, the last thing you wanted to do, you throw a few youngsters in, you get beat, and suddenly, you know, it just continues this sort of negativity. Whereas now they've played pretty well, you know, come up against a really good Napoli side, who I think 21 unbeaten, you know, this season, you know, hadn't been beaten this season. It's a really impressive victory. Obviously, there's caveats and stuff, but, you know, they very much restricted Napoli all the way through the game, bar the set piece. And, you know, it was a positive performance, and there was positive to take out for a lot of the sort of first team players who want to see that sort of confidence building into the last sort of two league games.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The formation thing's interesting because match day one in the Champions League, David, they get battered by Napoli. Jurgen talks after that about reinventing themselves. They reinvent themselves pretty badly, in all honesty, don't they? I mean, in terms of systems and what goes on after that point. And then they come to the end of the match day sequence against Napoli again, go back to basics and play 4-3-3 and actually look like something again.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that, Steve, because it was a bit like trying to block holes in a colander before. You know, you're reaching all over the place because on one hand you think, right, we're leaking goals, let's try and protect the defence. Then you think, hold on, we haven't got control of midfield, we're being bypassed, let's do something in midfield. Where are the fullbacks? You know, they're not getting forward. Are they tucking in too much? Where's Salah? Is Salah right? We're using Salah a lot on the right, you know, because Trent's pushing into midfield. And you're right, it was almost like... it's understandable, you almost overthink things too much, but it's almost a case if you're looking at one problem and to solve that, you then do something which sometimes maybe creates another problem. Or as you say, sometimes you just got to say, do you know what? Let's just do what's worked so well for so long. Go back to the 4-3-3, everyone knows the roles, everyone knows the positions, and, you know, let's play our football, really. And I suppose you can target sort of work there against Napoli, but I think, you know, not so much sort of the formation, but I think it's just too many individuals who've just had that loss of form, really. And we're going to see it return a little bit, really, but I think that's been the big concern. I know you've spoken before about the likes of Fabinho, Van Dijk's still been a little bit patchy. It's, you know, we all spoken about Trent's problems before, like, you know, Mo Salah's scoring the goals now, but he had a little sort of barren run as well, really. So it's just about getting these individuals back to the high levels, you know, they can perform. And then I think that'll get Liverpool playing consistently well. Like, we know they can pull out some great performances, some great results, but just getting that consistency they need to climb the table.
One of those key components who came back for his first 90 minutes of the season, and I think is going to be fundamental to Liverpool being positive for the rest of the campaign, is Ibrahima Konate. Absolute colossus, man mountain, Andy. His quality on and off the ball is brilliant. His presence in that team, all of a sudden, I think, just hugely felt against Napoli.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, it was a really good performance from him, and he showed all those different attributes to his game, which makes him such an impressive defender and makes loads of sense why Liverpool was so keen to wait to get him last season. Because, as you say, he carries that presence, that aggressiveness. He's good aerially, he's always challenging, he's on the front foot as much as possible, but he's also got that pace to go backwards as well. And it feels like, because we've not seen him as much, it feels like he's not carrying the scars of maybe this season in terms of sort of the defensive problems that Liverpool have had, because he's barely been involved. And it sort of feels like he's still, you know, defending and playing like he was last season, which you can't really say the same of the rest of, or most of, the defence at times this season. So yeah, it was a really impressive performance. I really liked his use of the way he was using the ball as well. It's not necessarily his game to always be stepping out and carrying the ball forward, and he seemed to be doing that a lot. And it's something that we've not really seen. Obviously, Joe Matip does really well, but, you know, Gomez doesn't really do that. It's more getting the ball and continuing to pass the ball. So it was interesting to see Konate stepping out, and he was effective as well. He was drawing players out, and well, he seemed to get more confident in doing it as the game went on, because I think the first one, he sort of gets to a point and it looked like he didn't have a clue where he was going next and was made up to get fouled. But then as he went on, I think he started using the ball much better and it became more and more effective. And yeah, he's going to be crucial. It's just such a shame that, you know, he's coming back just before the break, and you would have liked him to have been involved, you know, more in this first, you know, period. And maybe Liverpool's defensive issues may not have been as broad as they have been, and you know, that we've discussed at length. But yeah, I think post World Cup, and you know, Tottenham's that type of game where it's going to be stretched and you're going to need your centre backs to be on the ball and be able to go 1v1 and match players for pace when Spurs are sort of counter attacking and stuff. So yeah, you know, really impressive, really good signs, and hopefully he can stay injury free now. That's the big thing for him, is to make sure he can now get a consistent run of games, you know, in the side.
Formation works well and the system works well when the centre halves are playing well, David.
Oh, definitely. No, I was just thinking of, like, we all know that probably now Jurgen's first choice centre half pairing is Kanati and Van Dijk. We saw that sort of back end of second half last season when they were on that tremendous run, and, like, you know, just going back briefly to the Champions League final again, I thought he was one of the few Liverpool players who really delivered that night. You know, he played to his full potential, which was the problem. Liverpool didn't quite, you know, maybe he'll hit the heights they could do. And you're right, you know, Andy's right, he's just developing into such a commanding all-round, you know, class centre. I'm still only 23 as well, you know, so he's got so much ahead of him too. And you know, you just love, he's got all those combinations, he loves to head the ball, you know. And like, Liverpool have been vulnerable at set pieces. If you've got him and Van Dijk heading the ball again, just sort of, you know, non-shell pass attitude, you know, plus, as Andy says, that little bit of pace, you know, to close down, to get back, close down situations, that intensity that Liverpool need as well, which was lacking. You know, when you think of that Leeds second goal, really, you know, what was, it was all a bit sloppy, really, whereas you sort of think, well, you know, he'll sort of cure that, really. And you sort of feel, you know, going forward, that, you know, him and Van Dijk should be a performer or a centre-half pair that Liverpool can build on and get back to those clean sheets, you know, which have become so rare for Liverpool, really, especially in the Premier League, and stop conceding the first goal, you know, be concentrated, be switch on, give the team the platform, you know, to build the result. You know, Liverpool used to be all about those, you know, 1-0, 2-0, those sort of clean sheets, whereas now it's almost like this horrible cycle where they don't start well, and then they concede the first goal, and then it puts a pressure on the chase in the game, and okay, they might get an equaliser, or they, you know, but it's also one of satisfaction. You just feel, if you just give yourself a chance, you know, just start properly, be solid defensively, then you can do it. And I just think Kanate coming back can give them that.
They almost conceded. That VAR check that you referred to earlier went on forever. And even if you look at it again, it's a bit like the Harry Kane one, isn't it, the other day? You sort of think, this is a nonsense.
Well, this is the thing, Steve. And even, yeah, I don't know, it's very, a bit arbitrary to say, if you can't make a decision inside 2 minutes, let the thing stand, you know what I mean? But it is killing it a little bit. Like, you know, Liverpool got the benefit of that one. It was a
thankfully,
massive call,
yeah,
because then they were able to go on and win the game. But really, you do sort of wonder, where are we going with this? You know, we cannot hold the game up for that sort of length of time, because it was frankly ridiculous, because the players were even beginning to, bodies were cooling down, and the next thing, they'll be getting muscle injuries because the bodies have cooled down, because they've been standing around for so long. So it's almost like, look, just because you got all this fancy equipment, you can look at it from angles and create various images of it, you know, you don't have to use it. It's almost like, look at the goal, you know, from whatever angles, and if, you know, if you between you cannot see anything wrong with it inside whatever it is, 60 seconds or 90, it's just sort of let it go. And I think if that was the rule, I think clubs would accept it, because they sort of know, I know it's the cliche about things evening themselves, right? There'll be some of these decisions which will benefit you, and some you'll maybe look at, oh, hold on a minute, but if you look at it from this angle and draw a little 3D graphic of it, you can actually see his nose was marginally off.
Thankfully, you know, for Liverpool, it worked for them, didn't it? So, you know,
It worked in that occasion, it was good, but it's just from terms of spectacle, you think it's killing the game a bit.
Let's go on to Mo Salah. Move level with Steven Gerrard, all-time European scoring record, 41 goals. The difference being, Andy, he got his 41 in 64 Champions League appearances. Steven took 129 games. I wonder whether enough has actually been made of this. I've seen a few headlines on it, but it's European royalty stuff, this.
Yeah, it's exceptional. Like that, you read out those sort of numbers there, and it's just incredible, the sort of the rate of goals he's continually, you know, scored in Europe over a number of seasons. It's absolutely sensational, and I'm sure he would have liked to be a bit less scrappy of a goal to get him level, but I'm sure he'll be eyeing up the, you know, taking the first place for himself with a worldie, hopefully in the next round to send Liverpool through. That'll be nice. But yeah, it's incredible. And as you say, it's one of those, because Mo's hit so many records in a Liverpool shirt, you almost now just feel like, oh, it's another one that he's now got. Instead of when at the start, when he was, you know, hitting all these new records and everyone was like, wow, this is amazing. It's almost got to the point now where, you know, he gets another one, you go, all right, okay, yeah, well, that's not a surprise, is it? And it should be getting more credit than he should, because especially to do it in that fewer games, because that is just it's an incredible scoring rate. And, you know, it just shows how important he's been, you know, just to Liverpool in general, but also in helping Liverpool to get, you know, to three Champions League finals since he's been at the club. And yeah, just so impressive.
May not be replicated this for many years to come, David.
Well, this is it. I was just looking at his records there, Stephen. He's now eighth in Liverpool's all-time goal scoring list. He moved above Michael Owen there on 168 and 273 games. And you just look at the names above him, and he's going to catch them all relatively soon. You think he's only, what, four behind Doug Gleish, Fowler five, and then 18 up till Steven Gerrard then. And then there's a bit of a gap till Billy Little in 228. Now, if you think of those names we've just mentioned, where they stand in the pantheon of Liverpool greats, they are the pantheon of Liverpool greats, and yet this guy is going to probably outscore them, and he's going to probably do it at a faster scoring rate as well. I think there's only Gordon Hodgson, you know, of that elite who's, you know, has a better sort of, you know, goals per game ratio than him. And it's a weird thing. I suppose it's like anything in life. You don't appreciate sometimes how good someone is, or when they're among you, when they're doing it day in, day, when you sort of see them week in, week out. It's almost like they have to be retired in 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years hence. Oh, I'll tell you what, that Mo Salah, you know, what a player he was. You should have seen the goals he scored, you know, on the right, cutting inside onto left foot, curling them into the top corner. That goal against Manchester City, you know, in whatever, 2021 and stuff like that. Which is a shame, really, because the guy deserves the praise and the accolades now. And as he'll tell you himself, I'm not a striker. He just sees himself as like sort of a wide player, an attacking player. He's not a goal machine. He's not an Ian Rush. That was never his game. And yet, you know, look at these goal stats. They're absolutely phenomenal, really. And you're like, I think he is already one of Liverpool's all-time great players, and I think the debate can continue and start. Is he one greatest, second greatest? You know, where is he standing, that all-time greatest Liverpool player? Listen, I tell you, he's got to be very, very high.
Where's he going to get to? Because he's not going to beat Rushy, is he? So you've got the list in front of you. Where's he going to end up?
Yeah, he's got, like, Billy Little's on 228.
Right.
And you think Mo Salah's on 168. What's that? That's 60 goals. And you think, you know, that's,
oh, he's got 60
that's
in
doable.
It.
What's that? 32 plus 28.
He's got that, come on.
No, he's got, that's what it means. You'll get that, and then there's a bit of, you know, Gordon Hodgson's in 2-4-1 in third place. You know, he signed that new contract, so in theory, if he keeps, you know, doing his, what, 25-30 goals a season, he can do that. And then, of course, there's a bit of a jump to Roger Hunt in 2-8-5, and then, of course, Rushy on 3-4-6. And it's interesting, because it's, you know, you've probably heard this, now. People around the club, you know, he takes notice of this stuff. He's very interested in Ian Rush's record, about how many goals Rushy got. Obviously, he knows him at the club, and he got 3-4-6. And you can see as the cogs turn in his head, he think, that's a good target. You know, you know, he genuinely wants to sort of aim for that sort of thing. And you're sort of thinking, hold on, but Rushy was like there over his two spells for whatever it was, about, you know, 15, 16 years. You know, you've only been there five and a bit seasons. But, you know, this is the sort of ambition of the fella to try and push it on. But I think you're right. You could see him possibly, you know, getting past Gordon Hodgson and even pushing Roger Hunt, really. And then you're sort of thinking, wow, that's sort of statistics which will stand there for time immemorial.
I've said this on the pod before, but we had Mo on the Liverpool Christmas party last year. Brilliant for half an hour, but he knew every stat about Rushy, and he knew every stat about goal scoring. Believe me, it's in his head, isn't it? So you've got the purity of Mo, and then you've got the chaotic madness of Darwin Nunez. And I think we sort of love it in equal measures, don't we, Andy? There's some sort of chaos that goes around Darwin.
Yeah, he's just a maniac, isn't he? I love him. I genuinely, every time he comes on the pitch, he's just like, right, here we go, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
He's just got, I don't know, there's just something about him which is just mad. It is so bizarre. It's really difficult to, like, explain, but whenever he's on the pitch and whenever he's near the ball, something's going to happen. You know, something's going to happen. Sometimes it might not necessarily be the best thing or what you want to see happen, but I just think he continues to improve, and you can see that improvement. I think you can see the connections that he's beginning to get. I thought it was interesting that the assist that he nearly gets for Salah towards the end against Napoli, and you sort of compare that to the situation that, you know, Man City did that 3-on-1 where he has a shot. And I think Darwin Nunez a couple of weeks ago, if he was in that same position against Napoli the other day, he probably would have had a shot. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, that, you know, he thinks about it, he takes it past the man, puts a great ball across, it's superb defending it, you know, it's, he does everything right. So it's just those little things, and he's also getting the goals. I mean, obviously, I don't think Van Dijk was particularly happy that he...
Does he share the goal bonus on that one?
Yeah, I think there must be something there. You know, it's another goal, and it was really, you know, another positive performance off the bench where he came on and made a difference, and that's what you want to see. As long as he's on the pitch and making a difference and making Liverpool a better team, that's, you know, it's only going to be good, and it's only going to get better. Obviously, he needs to continue to be a little bit careful. He obviously got booked for, you know, a bit of a silly altercation in the box. So it's, you know, that sort of thing that's overhanging from that Crystal Palace red card. It's just still sort of in the back of your mind, you know, don't do anything stupid. But in terms of what he's beginning to produce, and in terms of the goals he's now scoring and the contributions he's making, you know, he's making Liverpool a better team when he's on the pitch, and that's all you can ask for. And ideally, as he continues to get coached and moulded, and that rawness sort of begins to go off him and gets more refined with his finishing and stuff like that, you know, his game's only going to keep going up to new levels. And if he keeps that madness and that chaos, then eat all the better for it.
I think there's just a connection, isn't there, with the Liverpool fan base and that, as we call it, madness. Everyone absolutely loves it as soon as he comes on. There was positives in the Napoli game. Obviously, you'll find some negatives. There were lots of positives. You've got to take all the good stuff going forward now, David. This game against Spurs feels like a bit of a Titanic one, given Liverpool's chase to get back within the top four race.
It's an interesting one, Steve, because you're right. And there's some respect to it. Oh, it's a massive game for Liverpool. The pressure's really on them. They've got to deliver it. Oh, it's quite daunting. And you think, well, hold on a minute. They're 10 unbeaten against Spurs. They haven't lost to them since October 2017. Remember that 4-1 debacle at Wembley? And, you know, Tottenham have turned their new stadium into a fortress, yet Liverpool are unbeaten in the three visits. You know, Tottenham, Newcastle went and, you know, won there recently. So Liverpool shouldn't be daunted by this. You know, if Liverpool do what Liverpool can do, if Liverpool are 85, I'd say, percent of what they can be, they'll win this game. Then you've got people like Son. Obviously, he's out of the game with his fractured eye socket. He's going to need surgery on that there. That's a blow to them. Okay, they're coming off the high of, you know, comeback win against Marseille, which has boosted their confidence. Yes, they have improved under Conte. They're one of those teams, I think, a bit like Arsenal. You know, you can see the scaffolding up around them where they're rebuilding them, and you can see the improvements that's going on, really. But they're not scary, really. Yes, they are improved and they are a good side, but, you know, they shouldn't be scary for Liverpool. Liverpool should be better than Tottenham. I say Liverpool have gone to stadium. They've played well. They should have won their last season in the 2-2 draw. You know, they were unlucky and stuff. So they shouldn't be daunted. So they should go there with confidence that they can get a result.
But Conte does know how to make life a little bit difficult for teams. He can make it messy, can't he? Hard for opposition teams coming, Andy.
Yeah, I mean you see what he did at Anfield at the back end of last season, and, you know, the draw that sort of played a big part in Liverpool not being able to get over the line in the title race. But yeah, he's that type of manager, isn't he? He knows how to stagnate and stifle teams. But what you would say is that Spurs they've been sort of struggling to do that in recent sort of weeks. That they've managed to turn things around in games in the last two. They've gone behind in both, and had to overcome a 2-0 deficit against Bournemouth, and obviously had to come from behind to win against Marseille. And you would hope that Liverpool, well, one, they're coming up against another team that likes a slow start, which is somewhat a positive in terms of not conceding the first goal. You would like to think that Liverpool would be able to sort of try and take advantage of that. I don't know, Spurs sort of seem to set up to not lose a game, and then as they go on, sort of grow into it. That's what it feels like at the moment in the Conte, that sort of what you get the sense of what they're doing. So, you know, it's about Liverpool trying to go there and impose themselves. And as David was saying, that the record's pretty good there. You know, Tottenham are always going to create chances. I think Son is a huge miss, because sort of that counter-attacking threat that he carries has always been a problem for Liverpool. And we've seen that in games where Tottenham have been dominant. You always sort of think back to that. It was that 4-1 game where Lovren goes off after, you know, before half-time. And it was just that the pace of the counter-attack, which was really threatening. And Son's always seems to have a really good game against Liverpool. So him not being there will be a big bonus. And it's just about Liverpool trying to get on, you know, get there, dominate from the first whistle and try and get their noses in front, because I think given the way Tottenham at the moment, you know, things aren't quite, they don't seem quite right under Conte at the moment. There's a little bit of unrest, I think, and obviously results, the last two results will have helped things in terms of, you know, getting wins on the board, topping the group, etc. But, you know, if you can get there and get in front, you know, that it could have an impact on Tottenham, because suddenly you can play type of football where they can't counter-attack you quickly, and you can sort of play against what they're hoping you do to then for them to exploit, if that makes sense.
So get through this, get points off this and Southampton, get to a World Cup break where the likes of Mo, Andy Robertson, Luis Diaz, Thiago, Canati's probably not a first choice in the France squad, am I right in saying that, David? So there's quite a few who actually might have something of a decent break over this World Cup period.
No, definitely. And that key thing that we mentioned before is just get those injured players like Jota and Luis Diaz back, because there's a couple of games where, even thinking of Leeds of the night, when sometimes you're looking at the bench, you know, when you're looking for that goal and you're looking at that wee bit of creativity, and you know, you're maybe just down to the three attackers and Nunes, Firmino and Salah, and you're thinking, wow, imagine if you could bring on Luis Diaz and leash him down the left, or, you know, Jota with his fox-in-the-box goal story and predatory instincts in that 6 yard, but, you know, just to get on the end of one of those second balls, you know, if it drops in the box, really, just that you're crying out for, really, and I think it's going to be a very big thing for Liverpool to get these people recovered, you know, for Boxing Day when the whole thing resumes, really. And I say, you know, Steve, there's no need to despair yet. Like, you sort of look at this, I know Liverpool are ninth, but I think this is 8 points behind fourth place Newcastle with the game in hand. You know, we all know these things can change very, very quickly. Look at the back end of last season, where Arsenal looked to be absolutely nailed on for Champions League and then stumbled right in the last 2-3 games and let Spurs in. So you can even turn around in such a short space of time. And like, Liverpool have still got, what was it, 26, you know, Premier League games to go. So there's loads and loads and loads. And, and they are better in the second half of the season.
Let's just finish with the honour bestowed on Jurgen Klopp, Andy. He's got the freedom of the city. I don't know whether that adds some sort of additional title to his name, or I know, is it in folklore that he can drive sheep through the city centre or something? That's one of the things you're entitled to do. Amazing to read that he's only the second foreign national after Nelson Mandela to get the honour. So no other sort of football name of a different nationality has had it. I think Kenny got it for his Hillsborough work, didn't he?
Yes.
But it's pretty amazing. How deserved is he of it?
Massively. Not just for what he's done, I think, in terms of changing Liverpool's fortunes around on the pitch, but I think just even the way, you know, in press conferences, the way he speaks about issues and sort of his community work and sort of, I think, through the charities that he supports in the local areas and stuff, it's, you know, he's become a, you know, a scouser, if you like, he has. And I think the city love him. Maybe not Everton fans, but everyone who's of the Liverpool side absolutely adore him. And I think that, you know, the way he's conducted himself as a Liverpool manager, not just in terms of what he's been able to bring in terms of winning everything that he could win as manager, but, you know, the way he's gone about the role, and, you know, he's become part of Liverpool and he understands the city, he understands the issues and he understands the people. And I think that, you know, that's a massive testament to him and the type of person that he is. And yeah, no, it was great to see him receive the honour. And, you know, it is incredible that it's him and Nelson Mandela, you know, is up there as the two who've received it from sort of a foreign background. So yeah, no, brilliant. Brilliant, and it just shows what a person he is and what he's done to the city since he's arrived.
Huge impact. Check out the brilliant video that Liverpool Football Club have made. It's on their social media now. The superb Phil Reed has made it, and it's lovely montage of Jurgen and his connection to the city and why he's got that on. Fantastic stuff. Boys, superb. David Anderson, Andy Jones, thank you very much for being on the Red Agenda. Hope you've enjoyed listening to it, guys. And we'll see you again next time.